bringing you the ag information you need. This is Market Talk, produced by the American Ag Radio Network. Now, here's your host, Jesse Allen.
And good afternoon. Welcome into this Friday edition of Market Talk. Thanks for joining us, making us part of your day here on January 21st, 2022. I'm your host, Jesse Allen. Again, thanks for joining us. Find us online, markettalkag.com. That is our home on the web. markettalkag.com is where you can find us. You can also find our social media links there, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. You can give us a follow. Make sure you give us a rating as well on all of our streaming sources or whatever you use, I should say. Links to those on our websites, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, Amazon, Google Podcasts, so many more. You can find all the links at markettalkag.com. Well, coming up here on today's show, we got a little bit of a special show for you. We are going to be talking with Jim Lappin from AMVAC, talking about their Simpos system as you get ready for planting season coming up here just a few short weeks away. We can't forget about that. It's going to be here before we know it in the U.S. We're going to talk to Jim Lappin here in just a few minutes about that Simpos system and a new partnership they have with, or continued partnership they have with, Verdesian Life Sciences as well. So we're going to get to that coming up here in just a minute. Also, we're going to have some commentary from a University of Missouri research associate, Ben Brown. He is talking about the outlook for 2022, and there is optimism in the world of agriculture for 2022. He also talks about some commodity price trends. We're going to go through that commentary from Ben Brown from the University of Missouri here in just a minute. Also, here we're going to be getting our commentary of the day's trade action from Arlen Suderman of StoneX. Just a quick rundown of the day's trade activity. And really, as we look at things here, the ag sector mixed to, we'll call it lower today, mixed to lower, as just a lot of fear out there on Wall Street. The VIX pushing to near 30 this morning. A lot of worries about what's going on in the Black Sea region, as corn, wheat, energies are all kind of hesitant here as we head to the weekend. And it's probably going to be something where we're going to get through the weekend. We're going to look at the weather models in South America. We're going to see what happens on the geopolitical front and with the inflation play. And we'll see if money flows back into commodities here as we get into next week. It has been a good week for commodities with money flow in, but just kind of ending it with a little bit of a dud and a whimper here on this Friday. And a lot of that, again, tied to the tensions with Russia, Ukraine, and the inflation worries there. Livestock side, kind of the same story. Chain speeds are improving as processors for both cattle and hogs, but the cattle market a bit lower today ahead of the cattle on feed report, which is coming out here after the market close. That report's expected to show total on feed numbers slightly below year ago levels. Now, the focus could soon shift to the 2022 U.S. growing season overall, with the market looking at anticipated weather patterns. Much of that outlook hinges on whether we'll see a death to La Nina or whether cool waters will linger in the equatorial Pacific into the northern hemisphere growing season, as some forecasters have suggested. That's something they're going to watch very closely. Some groups seeing a warmer undercurrent gaining momentum in the central Pacific that is expected to work its way to the surface as we approach spring, bringing an end to La Nina. Right now, we continue to watch that South American weather forecast, and it'll be interesting to see how that works here as we go through the next couple of sessions and next couple of days, I should say. Well, with that, let's get some commentary today from Arlen Suderman of StoneX on Market Talk, a shortened commentary session here for our Friday show. I talked to Arlen a little bit earlier here today, around midday. This is normally our midday commentary. We're going to have it here for the full show today. Here's Arlen's thoughts on what was going on with the market trade on Friday. Jesse Allen catching up with Arlen Suderman of StoneX. Arlen, as we take a look at the market trade on this Friday, let's start with the corn and wheat markets. Fairly quiet there. We did get a corn and soybean sale announced this morning on the wire. What are you seeing with these corn and wheat markets? They seem to be sticking together today.
Yeah, they are. And some of it's weekend. It's a lot of money flow situation. You mentioned the export sales. We saw in the USDA's daily flash reporting system, another two cargoes totaling 4.9 million bushels of soybeans are sold to China in the past 24 hours. Another 9.8 million bushels of corn were sold to, quote-unquote, unknown destinations. It's going to be believed that that's China. We had rumors circulating yesterday that China was working on a package of about 1.5 million metric tons, plus or minus a couple hundred thousand tons of both corn and soybeans that they would be announcing, maybe scattered out over the coming couple of weeks. And this is thought to be part of that. That supported the prices yesterday. Today is a Friday ahead of the weekend, and we've seen a different story, really kind of a roller coaster story. We've seen the grain and oil seeds get good support. In fact, many of the commodities get good support from a rotation of money into the hard assets this week as we move into a time when the Fed starts talking about withdrawing stimulus and worries about how well the stock market can continue to perform in that type of environment. And so everything was kind of weaker overnight. Then the grain and oil seeds rallied first thing this morning. Soybeans kind of led the way, but they've turned lower. Corn and wheat led the way, but all of them have really struggled to maintain those gains as we go forward. Traders are also keeping their eyes on the Black Sea region and the tensions between Russia and Ukraine, knowing that if a military conflict would erupt there, that that could dramatically impact trade coming out of the region and tighten the world balance sheet. But players are really playing it safe going into the weekend now.
I know you mentioned the stock market, that VIX hit near 30 on Friday morning. Would you assume some of that fear is maybe tied to some of those worries over in the Black Sea region and just the unknown there with the geopolitical, or is it more inflationary?
I think it's a combination of the Black Sea worries as well as worries about how the Fed is going to manage things going forward. The Fed meets next week on Tuesday and Wednesday, so we're anticipating a big statement coming out from the Fed on Wednesday, and the trades really get nervous. This is really an unprecedented situation that the Fed has created for itself and now needs to figure out how to raise interest rates to normalize them while also starting to withdraw stimulus from the economy and doing it at the right pace. And we've never been in this type of a situation that it's created before, and traders are nervous.
How about over in livestock here on this Friday? Hog market looking fairly strong again, while cattle looking a little bit lower. Much of the same from Thursday's trade, it seems like, here, Arlen.
Yeah, we got a big cattle on feed report this afternoon that has traders cautious. Overall expectations that we're going to see on feed numbers just slightly below year-ago levels, while placements would be about 1.8% above and marketing's about 0.9% above year-ago levels with an extra business day in December this year versus last year. When we look at this week's cash trade, it was around 137 in the Southern Plains, and we've already got that priced into the board. Seeing some good pickup in strength in chain speeds for both cattle and hogs. That's supporting a little bit more strength in the cash hog market, providing some support for the lean hog futures.
Arlen, real briefly, before I let you go, you know, we have mostly gains on the week here across the commodity sector, grains and livestock. If I'm a producer, all this news that's flying at them, all the different theories about what they should do with their marketing plan, what would be some good advice facing all this volatility and uptrend we've seen this week?
I have a plan written down. It can be flexible. You can change it, but have a plan that you're willing to have the discipline to stick with it. Look at it as a business opportunity. When can you lock in margins on both the input and the what you produce as far as prices go? You'll never go broke making a profit, and don't turn back. You know, don't regret. Don't have your regrets that cause you to make bad decisions going forward. Stick with a plan that's going to work for your business and move forward.
And again, that is comments with Arlen Suderman of StoneX. Well, commodity prices have been good so far in 2022, but what does the long-term trend look like? Well, Ben Brown is a senior research associate in agricultural and applied economics for the University of Missouri. U.S. farmers had a good harvest in 2021, and another good harvest this year in North and South America might begin to put some downward pressure on commodity prices.
Given where we sit today, you expect the picture to improve. We had very good crops, even with the dryness that we saw in the Upper Plains this year in 2021. We had good crops here in the United States. South America is the one that's dominating the news right now, which is rightfully justified because they're in their prime growing season in February. Into January and February is a critical time for crop growth development in South America, and especially given how dry it's been and the weather forecast. That's largely led to a lot of the up-down movements that we've seen in the corn and soybean markets.
There is concern surrounding the first corn crop in Brazil.
You know, the corn crop in South America is probably what concerns me a little bit right now, just from the standpoint that the majority of Brazil's first crop corn is grown in southern Brazil, where it's been extremely dry. Argentina got some rain, and that's helped potential a little bit. So we're really kind of keeping an eye on that market to see if we can pick up some extra export market share to the global marketplace. And so I look at it and I say, with all of that, in the short run, we've got some supportive fundamentals. But if we have a decent growing season here in the United States, with some of the pressure to add and expand acres, both here in the United States and other places in the Northern Hemisphere, I would expect that we see a decline in soybean and corn prices as we move through the calendar year.
Now, a lot of price action will depend on what happens during the upcoming growing season.
You get a weather scare in the summer. Soybeans is the market that probably scares me the most, just from the standpoint that it's not an overly bullish market at the moment. If you don't take into account the renewable diesel pressure that we're seeing, but it's kind of one of those that's in the early stages of development. I think there's a lot of excitement and a lot of energy for renewable diesel, but it's going to take some time to build that. And I don't think we fully understand how big of a scale that is. There's reports out there of 8 billion gallons of increased capacity in renewable diesel, and we'll see if we get there. One of the things I've witnessed over the years is that we tend to overstate some of these new adoptions or new products. So, you know, we'll see.
Now, in summary, he says agriculture has a lot of supportive factors underneath it, but the future will all boil down to what size crop the U.S. will bring in during 2022.
The reason I'm bringing all this up is there's some supportive fundamentals, but you get down to the summer months with a decent crop here in the United States, it's going to put some serious pressure and some serious weight on prices moving forward.
Now, of course, it's typically difficult to predict what the future may hold for American agriculture, and 2022 is no different. Brown says that farmers have reasons, though, to be optimistic here in the new year.
There is great optimism on the output side. This has been a very solid year and summer and winter for outputs of grain crops, all the way from corn, soybeans, and wheat, cotton, spring wheat, sorghum. We've had opportunities to sell it at profitable prices. The fact that we've seen soybean rallies of 20 cents or greater, even when above $13, is kind of exciting for people to look out. Certainly, we've seen cotton have some amazing price potential. Spring wheat's going to have chances to be profitable, and I certainly expect to see more spring wheat acres, just given how dry it was there last year and the basis potential for quality wheat this year. And we've had chances to sell winter wheat in the $8 range, mid to low $8 at different times this winter.
Livestock producers, especially those who raise beef cattle, also have reasons for optimism.
On the cattle side, especially in livestock and cattle, it's been supportive. We have great demand, incredible demand, both domestically and international for beef product. But then we've got some supply side fundamentals that are also supportive as well. The herd is declining. We're slaughtering at very high rates. It's one of those things that even though you hear reports of meat shortages at the grocery store, it's really not a factor of market ready cattle not being available or slaughtering plants not slaughtering at full capacity. We've been slaughtering at rates that we haven't seen in a long time on the cattle side. And those facilities are working just as hard as they can. The reason we're seeing shortages is just because we've had such amazing domestic demand, even at higher prices.
Brown says the pessimism in 2022 is coming from the input side of the equation.
However, and as I've talked with many producers, you look at the finances and you do the breakdowns and the budgeting and everything, and there's likelihood to going to be very good cash receipts, both in livestock and crops across the board, even with higher input prices, especially if you do some risk management right now. My concern is that people don't do risk management and prices fall as we work our way through the calendar year and supply kind of builds back up a little bit. And we're still stuck with what we call slow or sticky cost side. Costs are slow to come down. But right now, you look at these prices and prices for the output are keeping up with the input costs across the board for most products. And so it's a rather optimistic picture. Farmers would love to have the output prices that we're seeing without the high input prices. And it's just been a function of, as sure as the sun rises in the east, as output prices go up, so do input prices.
And he says both farmers and extension colleagues in other states have talked about the potential of farmers changing their planting intentions because of high input costs. Brown says there will likely be some acres switching, but it might not be that big of a number.
There's maybe not as much consideration about switching crops because the finances, even with high fertilizer prices, have held to be profitable, or the returns per land between corn and soybeans just aren't that much different to switch. But there are certain areas of this country, Missouri being one of them, where I find pockets where you can get a pretty consistent soybean crop, bump somewhere around 45 to 50 bushels per acre year in and year out on soybeans. But you don't even have to have a dry year or excess rainfall to have huge variability in corn. And so in states like Missouri, and I'm going to throw Ohio into this mix as well because I worked in Ohio and I know several folks out there, there's pockets in Ohio where soybeans just continuously outperform corn. And so in those areas, I do expect some shift from corn to soybean because they're sitting there going, I don't want to risk this high operating cost with the chance of having a low corn yield.
And again, Ben Brown is with the University of Missouri. And joining us today, we have Jim Lappin. He is the director of the SIMPAS Portfolio and Alliances at AMVAC, joining us on the show today. Jim, I appreciate the time. Thanks for making some time to join us here today.
Thank you, Jesse. Always happy to share our story with growers and listeners, and excited about the things we're looking at with SIMPAS and SIMPAS Supply Solutions.
Well, let's talk a little bit about SIMPAS first. I know that you guys just announced a great partnership continuation with Verdesian Life Sciences, and we're going to get to that more in a second. But let's talk just a little bit about SIMPAS, and maybe for some of our listeners who are unsure what it is, can you give us a little background on the platform?
Sure. So AMVAC has a long history of participation with smart box systems and granular applications of insecticides in crops like corn. So several years ago, we started thinking about how do we take that kind of functionality at plant inputs and really take it to the next level. And we've seen a much broader adoption of prescriptive ag with fertility, with seeds. So we have a lot of growers now that are prescriptively broadcasting or applying their fertilizer. They're prescriptively applying their seed or adjusting their seed rate based on a set of conditions. So it made sense to us to bring forward a solutions that say, how can I take my at plant inputs and solve geospatially distinct problems, right? It doesn't always make sense to treat the whole field for a problem if I only have a problem in a portion of the field. So how can I deliver one or more multiple products and geospatially treat just what I need to treat? So that was kind of the birth of SIMPAS. So for several years, we've been working towards that goal. And we've launched SIMPAS here in 2021. And I would say really 2022 is our first year of commercial adoption. Unfortunately, with pandemic, it made it a little difficult to get in front of growers the last year or two. But we're excited. We have systems that we're talking to growers anywhere from New York to North Carolina, North Dakota to Louisiana and everywhere in between. So the system itself is an aftermarket system that bolts on to most planters. So whether you have a Deere, a Case, a Kinze, we have adaptive brackets that allow you to bolt that system on to most planters that are out there in the market. The system actually has three cartridges per row, so you can apply up to three products per row prescriptively. So you might have an insecticide in one cartridge. You might have a fungicide or a plant health product in another cartridge. You might have in soybeans, you might have one of our new products like Ironclad. You mentioned the Verdesian relationship. So again, we're developing products for both corn, soybeans, for cotton, for peanuts. So growers are going to have utility of this system in multiple crops with multiple products to address specific challenges that they may face within those fields.
Well, I think this is fantastic stuff, Jim. And you're right. There's some areas of the field where, you know, growers maybe want to apply a little bit more, or, you know, they want to apply something different in a field. And that's really what this SIMPAS system is able to do. It's great stuff. And there's another clip on the video here of the row unit. Now, you mentioned as well the partnership with Verdesian, and I want to talk about Ironclad, and I know that's another product here for the 2022 planting season. Talk about this for soybeans. I know it can help increase iron availability, and that's a big thing for many areas.
So in the northern Midwest, right, I would say you go from I-80 north, you have areas where pHs start getting 7, 7.5. Low-lying areas where you get iron tied up because of excess calcium. or nitrogen in some cases. So what that translates to is you get spots in the field that get this iron chlorosis. It's kind of a yellowing of the soybean plant and can have a significant impact on yield, anywhere from 10 to as much as 30% yield reduction. And historically, growers have had to try to manage it by using varieties that are more tolerant or using supplemental iron. And Ironclad is one of those supplemental iron products. But historically, you've had to make a decision about treating the whole field or not treating the whole field. Now with Ironclad and Simpass, you can decide, all right, I can look at my satellite imagery from my last year in a field of soybeans and pretty well define what are the areas that specifically had challenges in the past. Those areas don't change a lot year to year. So I can go back and look at those imagery and then create a map that says I'm only going to apply Ironclad as a mitigating solution for iron chlorosis just in those areas that have demonstrated they've had the problem in the past. So again, whether that's 10, 20, or 30% of a field, you can just target those specific areas and only spend the resource on the input specifically where you've had the problem historically.
I would have to think, Jim, with the Simpass system, you know, and being able to prescriptively apply to fields, that's got to help with the ROI for farmers. We think about the cost of inputs right now. Everything's going up, but being able to, you know, like you said, 20%, 30% of the field, whatever the case may be, I would have to think that gives a great return on investment for our growers.
So some other examples of way we're creating value with the system is, again, you can solve multiple agronomic issues in a single pass, right? So you have up to three products where most systems historically that are bolt-on systems have been a one product, one crop kind of solution. We sell SmartBox. We're very successful with SmartBox for corn rootworm solutions. But now the Simpass system gives us greater latitude to not only it's capable of making linear applications across the whole field. It's capable of making variable rate applications across the whole field, or it's capable of variable rate applications just within prescriptive zones that an agronomist or grower may decide. So it gives the grower many, many options to solve multiple problems in a single at-plant pass. So yes, there's the opportunity for individual input savings if I'm only using the product on a portion of the field. There's some convenience element as well in terms of it's really a cartridge system where I just place the cartridge on and go. There's no opening containers. There's no mixing. It's a closed system. So literally, think of it like an inkjet printer. I put the cartridge in and I go. It starts applying at speeds up to 8 and 10 miles an hour with some of these higher speed planters. It's closed delivery system, so worker safety. It's a returnable container, and every container has a readable, writable RFID tag. And what that does is not only does that tag tell the system when to turn on and when to turn off based on that shape file that was loaded into the planter system, but it keeps a record of what was applied and where it was applied. So instead of sitting down at the end of the day saying, all right, what did I apply today? Where did I apply today? It keeps an automated record of what product was applied by dose rate, by zone. So the grower gets these as applied maps as a result of the application that he can then overlay with his other data files to say, here's where I've applied a specific product. So it helps on things like traceability. Think about things like the evolving carbon market. If there's a product that I can use that gives me a carbon credit, this will give me a forensic level traceability of where I use those products. Right. So it keeps an automated record. The other issue is growers will ask the question, well, wait a minute. All those cartridges are used at different rates. They're not all going to run out at the same time. So we've developed a system where you get the cartridge, you put the cartridge on the system. You may swap those cartridges out when you're stopping for seed or stopping for chemicals or stopping for fertilizer or for fuel, whatever the case may be. We take those partial containers back and the grower only gets billed for what actually he used and what was actually treated and dispensed from the container, right? So it eliminates partial containers sitting around the farm. And again, from what we've heard from initial users, they like the idea of only paying for what they use versus I have to swap containers around to manage that partial container at the end of the season. So again, it eliminates any on-farm storage of partial containers and makes sure they're only paying for what they actually use.
Well, gotta love technology bringing convenience to our growers and helping them with their operation. It sounds like the SimPass system does just that. Jim, before we run out of time, any final thoughts you would like to share? Anything we haven't touched on today?
Well, so just a couple other examples. We made the announcement about Ironclad. We have a whole host of products that we're looking at. We actually have a total of 8 or 9 products that we'll be utilizing here in 2022 planting season. We had our initial products, our corn rootworm solutions, Aztec HC, Counterforce, and Zinc. Zinc's a good example of a grower may be applying a flat rate of a zinc product across the whole field. SimPass gives them the opportunity to either displace that flat rate or supplement that flat rate. There may be zones in the field that are calling for a higher dose rate, and they can use their flat rate in their at-plant fertilizer to get an average dose rate and then use SimPass to supplement in those areas that are calling for a higher dose rate, right? So to get the right fertilizer in the right place at the right time has always been our goal. On the other front, we have our first liquid product that'll be coming to the market here in 22, a product called Invigorate. It's a consortium of microbes that essentially help you with soil health, early season growth, root development, that help you increase overall availability of the nutrients that are already in your soil profile. We're looking at additional insecticides. We're looking at some of these nitrogen-fixing microbes where a grower could be able to look at his field and say, where am I most at risk of nitrogen loss and where might I want to supplement? And with the high price of nitrogen today, we all know there's a diminishing rate of return on nitrogen, where I get to a point where that next unit of nitrogen isn't giving me the same return as that last unit of nitrogen. So in those areas, you can use these nitrogen fixing in my highest yielding zones to make sure where you're at risk of losing nitrogen or where you hit that threshold for lower efficiency for that nitrogen, that's the place you would use these highest yielding zones to make sure those crops never run out of nitrogen. So again, these products are microbes that help the plant literally scavenge nitrogen from the atmosphere that helps support your yield objectives and your yield goal on top of whatever rate of synthetic nitrogen that you're using. Other areas like nematicide. Nematicide problems don't tend to be whole field problems. They tend to be on certain types of soils in certain areas of the field. So again, we have several solutions that really allow the grower to get more specific around the at-plant inputs they're going to utilize. And what we're finding is they're treating areas that maybe went untreated before because you couldn't justify whole field treatment, or they're moving from whole field to more area-specific treatment that are saving them input dollars that they can utilize somewhere else in their operation.
Well, fantastic information. And Jim, I would think if growers want to learn more about the SimPass system, they could probably easily start online at simpass.com, can't they?
Correct. Simpass.com or anvac.com. Simpass.com to get information, connect you to one of our specialists that can connect you to a Trimble dealer about getting a quote on a SimPass system, or anvac.com and simpass.com to get information about the products available.
With that, Director of SimPass Portfolio and Alliances at AMVAC, Jim Lappin, I appreciate the time. Thanks for joining us here today and sharing more. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Jesse, and good luck to your listeners out there for the coming 22 planting season.
And again, that's Jim Lappin with AMVAC joining us today here on Market Talk. That's going to do it for the show on this Friday, January 21st. Thank you so much for making us part of your day. Find us online. Just go to markettalkag.com. I'm your host, Jesse Allen, wishing you and yours a great rest of your day and weekend. We'll talk to you Monday.